Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in for this episode with Larry McMillan. Remember, new shows are posted on Mondays and Thursdays. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes and YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show. CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. Today, I spoke with the president of McMillan Analysis Corporation, Larry McMillan. Larry shared with us how he learned how to trade options and how he uses technical analysis in his options strategies. Larry gives us a detailed example on how and why he executed one of his latest E-mini S&P straddles. We went over reasons an options trader would want to trade multi-leg option spreads, and last but not least, I went over a scenario with Larry. If I thought the market had made a significant high or low, and we could see a sharp move in a short amount of time, how I can go about using options on futures to trade it. So without further ado, let me take you right to the interview with Larry. You've been a trader for a long time, Larry. How'd you get your start in trading?
Well, it's funny, when I was first in the first trades I ever made, I was actually in the Army at the time, and I had a small inheritance. So I went down to the local brokerage firm and didn't really know what I was doing. And they assigned me to someone, and the woman said, well, you know, the big thing is environmental stocks. This was like 1970, I guess. So I said, well, okay, let's buy some of those. Well, they all became wallpaper. After that, I decided I better do my own thinking, not rely too much on anyone else. So I really didn't do too much more with that. But then after I got out of the Army, I was in grad school, and I wanted to, you know, find something that was a little better than just, say, buying stocks. And I was actually waiting in a line to buy Denver Broncos tickets. I was going to the University of Colorado at the time. And I got there was a bookstore there. So I hopped in and grabbed a book. It was entitled How to Make a Million by Mort Shulman. And despite the corny title, it was actually a pretty good book on convertible arbitrage trading. And if you know, the convertible bonds actually have a built-in option. They didn't call them that at the time. But it was a derivative, and I thought it was pretty interesting, and I started trading some of this. So that's the first, you know, serious trading I was doing where I was thinking for myself, or halfway for myself anyways.
Did a lot of your education come from books?
Well, I'd say pretty much that, or self-taught. Yeah. You know, all the option stuff is self-taught because there were no books really. I mean, there might have been one or two, but they were very elementary. So, you know, I graduated from the University of Colorado in 1972 and took a job at Bell Labs out here in New Jersey. And they had, I guess the option exchange started in April 73. And my broker at the time said, hey, there's this article in Business Week about this thing called options. Maybe you should take a look. And meanwhile, I'd already started to get into technical analysis through my broker. And so, I don't know, the option thing just completely clicked. I mean, I could tell, you know, spreads, you know, well, now what they call reversal arbitrage, all this stuff completely made sense to me. and was able to piece it together pretty quickly and, you know, make some strategies out of it, et cetera. So for some reason, it just hit. But that stuff was all self-discovery. I basically taught myself or figured out things, through math. I mean, a few times you do some trades, you take some losses, and you figure out what you did wrong. But the actual strategy was, I was pretty much able to work that out on my own.
Yeah, funny how that works, Larry. I tell people all the time that you can't choose what you're going to trade or exactly how you're going to trade until you trade a little bit. You need to find something that resonates with you. And it sounds to me that once you started digging a little bit into options, it resonated with you.
Absolutely. But I still use technical analysis a lot because, a lot of the option strategies that we do are somewhat theoretical and based on, implied volatility and stuff like that. But we also do, and I certainly in my own account do a certain amount of speculation where I use technical analysis to set up a trade and then trade it with an option.
Well, let's stay there then. Talk to us about how you use technical analysis in developing your option strategies, and also if you use any fundamental analysis.
I don't use any fundamental analysis. To me, it just doesn't make any sense. Predicting earnings and assuming that a stock is going to move in line with earnings, all that stuff. If you actually look at the statistics of it, it doesn't work. Maybe it works over a very long period of time, but as an option trader, I'm not in a position for a very long period of time. So for me, technicals work a lot better. But there's two things that we look at. I mean, we publish the Option Strategist newsletter, and I'm pretty opaque, and I pretty much put in everything that I'm thinking. I mean, over the years, written a lot of articles in there. But, I look for some theoretical things. I'd say the number one thing that I look for is where volatility is out of line. That could be a volatility skew, for example, like in the S&P options where the out-of-the-money puts are way expensive as compared to at-the-money puts on the same instrument. So that's an edge. It's not necessarily an arbitrage, but it's an edge. We look for edges in the volatility derivatives. We do a lot of work in those. I also have developed some techniques about trading stocks in front of earnings, a few things like that. Then we'll look more into the speculative side of things, which is like using put call ratios to figure out some contrary opinion. So, kind of look over those things. Another thing that I look at a lot is where there's heavy option volume. And I mean unusual. I don't mean just like a bunch of spy calls were trading somewhere. I'm talking about, like a stock like you might have to, let's say today, where you had this ZAYO, had unusual option volume, and it turns out that, they're getting their, they've put the company up for sale, essentially. So things like that. And then, that's just the beginning of it. You have to look deeper into that sort of thing to see whether it's really making a trade or not. But those are the things that I look at. And then, of course, I run through all my other technical indicators, too, which we can get into later if you want to.
Yeah, I definitely want to. What I'd like to get a little bit deeper into right now is just really the process from beginning to eventually execution. So you mentioned a few things that you look at, and it sounds to me as though you have some discretion over these different things that you mentioned, volatility skew. You talked about some technicals, and you look at, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you look at the overall picture, and then from there you decide how you want to approach that trade. So let's go through a trade from soup to nuts. Take us through maybe an SPY trade or something that you've recently traded. I mean, obviously this is a futures radio show, maybe a futures options trade where you sat down and where the idea began and how it evolved to eventually to where you executed it.
All right, so we did. I did this trade Friday or last Friday, but you could still do it today. I was looking at, you know, VIX. VIX is the volatility index on the CBOE, and it's trading below 13 now, which is very low, and probably too low. But you know, when you say something is too low, it can stay there for a long time. I just say it's overbought. It's an indication the market's overbought, but the market can stay overbought for long periods of time. However, we do know that when VIX is low, options are cheap. So option buying strategies would be more in favor, especially in the broad market, because VIX is measuring the implied volatility of S&P 500 options. I at this point, I mean, we've been bullish most of this year, and I'm still a little bullish right now, but I don't have the kind of faith in it that I did, let's say, back at Christmas time. So with VIX low and sort of a halfway neutral opinion on the market, the strategy that makes sense is to buy a straddle. You buy both the put and the call. They're relatively cheap. So if the market makes a big move in either direction, you'll make money. Or if for some reason the market just starts to become volatile and trade around in a heavier range, then implied volatility will pick up and you can make money that way too. So we're buying S&P straddles in the futures. We're buying them about a month out. So you're paying about 75 points for an S&P straddle. Your S&P is trading roughly 29.10, let's just say right now. 29.08, I guess. So that's a relatively small move for S&P over the course of an entire month. And in fact, this goes out to mid-May. So, no guarantees, but, that's a strategy that we'll use. And then I also, when you buy straddles, people often get, kind of deer in the headlights thing. You don't know what to do with it once you've got it. So what we typically do is once it moves in one way or the other far enough, we'll roll the option up. So we kind of recenter our position, take some profits on part of it, and then we're set to go, if it goes even higher. So let's just say we buy this straddle now, and let's say the market goes up and breaks through the all-time highs and trades up to like 29.80. So maybe the straddle is now 80 to 100 points in the money. We'd sell the call that we own and we'd buy a new call at that strike. So we still have upside potential, but we've taken a big credit out of the position when we do that. So that should more or less lock in a break-even situation or perhaps a small profit. And then if it continues on up from there, we're essentially playing with house money.
A bunch of questions, because you're talking to a futures guy who trades very few options. And the only time I've really traded options over the last few years is when I've looked at the market and said, you know what, instead of me sitting in a futures position, I'll call one of my options friends and say, hey, this is what I want to do. And they'll tell me what to do. So I'm very interested in learning more about options. So I have several questions about what you just talked about. First thing is, how did you determine what strike you wanted to trade?
When we're buying a straddle, I buy at the money, because my whole point is I'm not carrying a huge opinion on the market at the time. So it could go down or up from here. It wouldn't shock me either way. I think the technicals are bullish right now, but with VIX being as low as it is, that's always a bit dangerous if things start to get going on the downside. History tells you that when VIX starts from the 12 level, it can accelerate pretty fast. So I buy an at the money strike. So the strike of the position is basically, where the futures are trading right at that time. So right now, you'd be right around 29.10.
Next question: why did you choose to go a month out?
Well, I want the position to have some time to work, and VIX is a 30-day volatility measure. So while other measures of other volatility time frames are also low, I know that VIX is staying low right now on a 30 calendar day basis. So that's about a month out. I would, if you wanted to go a little longer, I wouldn't say no. But if you wanted to go much shorter, I might object, because you're exposing yourself to too much daily time decay if you do that. We're buying a one-month option, and while there's certainly going to be some time decay, that gives me, I feel, enough time for the position to work, you know, so that I don't have to immediately start worrying about time decay.
Explain to us what has to happen in the market for the straddle to make you money or for it to lose money.
So very simply, S&P has to go up 80 points or down 80 points in, at some time in the next month, for the way I handle the position. Because once it does that, that's what I explained before, then I make that adjustment and lock myself into a non-losing trade. So if you actually take a, there, we have probability calculators that can do this calculation. You know, what's the probability that the futures actually move 80 points from a 2910 level in a month, or any time before a month, actually. So at any time during the month, it's a pretty decent number. You know, it's much higher than if it had to close there. I'm not saying it's going to close there, but I'm just saying I want it to get there sometime. It could do it next week, who knows? But once it does, then I'm going to make that adjustment. And essentially, you know, from a futures trade thinking thing, I'm moving my stop up to break even, if you want to think of it that way.
As a futures trader, I scale in and scale out of everything. That's just always how I've done things. I mean, I don't always scale out, but majority of the time I'll scale in and I'll look to hopefully be able to scale out. If I'm losing, I sometimes will just get right out. But the question I have for someone who trades options is, are you getting all in at once? And if it starts going your way or against you, are you doing any scaling with this, or is it just you're in, hold, and wait?
Yeah, these positions pretty much you're in. I mean, if it's still sitting right around here and the straddle gets a little cheaper over the next few days, I guess you could add to it. But typically, it's going to start to move somewhere. And now if you try to buy another straddle at that point, well, if you try to buy the same straddle at that point, you're already biased. Either the call is in the money or the put's in the money. And if you try to buy another straddle at that point, then you're just sort of adding to the, I guess, you're adding to the distance that the thing has to move to make them both profitable. So I typically will put up roughly 5% of the trading account on a position like this and put pretty much all of it in right away.
Okay, yeah, that was going to be my next question, is how much capital you're determining to use for a trade like this, because once again, as an outright futures trader who's not trading holding positions overnight, I come in, I have a risk per day, a risk per trade, and I go in and I execute, I get flat, and I'm done. But when you're holding an options position, you are allocating X amount of capital towards this position. And when you said 5% of the account, talk to me about why you chose that amount. And also, if it goes against you, is there a point where you say, you know what, this is just not working, and you cut your losses? Or are you just risking that entire 5%?
So, first of all, as far as the amount to invest, I usually do between 3 to 5% of my speculative trading account on any one speculative position, this being a speculative position. I mean, it has a little edge in volatility, but it's mostly speculation. So if you do that, you could sustain a fairly large series of losses before you're wiped out. And to me, being wiped out would be to lose, let's say, 60% of your capital. I'm not talking about losing 100, but if you lose that much, then you basically better go back to the drawing board, I would think. With only investing 3 to 5%, you can withstand a drawdown and still, you know, be in the game. As far as your other question about do you ever pull the plug on it? Yes, you would. If the thing is still sitting here with less than 2 weeks to go, I would probably either, I mean, if I still like the straddle, I'd probably sell this one and buy another longer term one. And certainly I wouldn't let it get inside of 1 week to go if it was just sitting here like this. If it kind of moves halfway to where you want it to move, let's say it moved up 40 points, then you might use a trailing stop on the call or something like that. But I usually, try to not let this kind of a position get down to within the last week or two, if possible. It's certainly not the last week.
Are you using limit orders to get in and out of all of this stuff, or are you going to the market?
As far as execution goes, I use a limit on everything. And if I don't get filled at my limit, although I would say on S&P options, the E-mini S&P options, they are so liquid that if you've put down a reasonable, price, say halfway between the bid and offer, you're probably going to get filled. Yeah. So if I'm buying that straddle, I'll look at what the market is. I'll put a limit order. I just never use a market order if possible. So I put a limit order in, maybe halfway between the bid and the offer, and see, if I'm not getting filled, then I could raise my limit a little bit. But I would always use a limit order, especially on any trade, like that, that's using more than one option in the trade. So the straddle has both the put and the call. If you were just going straight in to buy a call and you had some immediacy about you, like you're in a day trading system and it gave a signal and you need to get right in, I suppose you could, use a market order, but I still probably would use a limit order at the offer rather, if I'm buying the option rather than a market order.
Let's dig a little bit deeper into the technical analysis tools that you use. You already mentioned that you do use them. Talk to us about some of your favorites.
All right. Well, the number one thing I look at is the chart of the S&P if we're talking broad market here. So, or stock, futures, anything. I look at the chart of the underlying. But then we can go into a couple of other things. One is put-call ratio. So for the purpose of put-call ratios, as far as predicting the stock market goes, we use what's called the equity-only put-call ratio. We compute that. The CBOE produces some data on that as well. But that's all stock options that trade. It seems like in any given day, there's a lot of option trading that has nothing to do with speculation. There's hedgers, there's spreaders, there's guys doing reversals and stock substitute and all that stuff. That's just noise. What you're looking for is when the put-call ratio gets extremely high or extremely low and actually then reverses, that's where your signals come. So I'll look at that. We keep pretty close watch on that every day. And our own computer, we buy our data raw from Genesis Data and from DTN. And then we process it ourselves. So I'm not really relying on the CBOE's summary of the data. We're actually calculating our own data. And we do make that data available to all of our subscribers of our daily services every day. Then the third thing I look at is I do look at market breadth in perhaps a little bit different way than a lot of people do. But, the New York Stock Exchange has things on it that are not stocks. So breadth is a dubious number there. But we have a great set of stocks. That's stocks that have options trading on them. So we obviously have that data. And so we look at that stocks only data for breadth. And then the last thing is volatility. So as I mentioned, volatility is very low right now. The 200-day moving average of VIX is sitting just below 17. VIX has not closed above 17 all this year. It's probed up there a couple of times, but hasn't closed above it. So to me, as long as VIX can stay below 17, I'm not too worried. I think stocks can continue to rally. But if VIX gets above 17, to me, that's a huge, bearish warning signal. And I'd be definitely doing something at that time. So So those are the sort of simple ones that I look at every day. And there's a few others that we add in there as well, but those are the basic ones.
We've spent a lot of time today talking about how you trade a straddle, specifically in the E-mini S&P. So I want to move on and talk about other option strategies that you are trading. And since we've been really focusing on the E-mini S&P so much, what other types of option strategies do you use to trade E-mini S&P options?
So the number one strategy that we use in our managed accounts, our CTA accounts, is what we call volatility capture. And it is in the E-mini S&Ps. And if you look at the, as I said before, the implied volatility, in other words, the implied volatility is you calculate that for each individual option. And the higher it is for that option, the more expensive that option is relative to other options on the same entity. So let's say we're looking at the E-mini S&P, and an at-the-money put might be trading with an implied volatility right now. Let's say it's trading with an implied volatility of 14. Don't worry about what 14 means, just that it is 14. Now, if we look at another option that's maybe 20 points out of the money, maybe it's trading with an implied volatility of 16. And if we look at a put option that's by the way, that's a put option that's 20 points out of the money. If we now look at a put option that's even farther out of the money, say 40 points out of the money, it might be trading with an implied volatility of 18. So if we sell some of those expensive ones, expensive in that their implied volatility is higher, and buy the cheaper one, then we actually have a theoretical edge in our position, because by expiration, the volatility will retreat to whatever it is, the volatility of the S&P 500 itself, and those will all have to fall in line. Chris, things can happen, you know, in that particular situation, you've got risk to the downside. So we might hedge that risk by, you know, buying a very deep out of the money put option for a small amount of money just to hedge ourselves. It also locks in our margin requirements. So as you know, if the futures brokers don't like you risking their money, you can lose your money. That's fine. Then it's, don't lose theirs. So that would lock in a specific loss in the position. And it works out very well that way. And we've got a theoretical position, you know, that takes a lot of work and, you know, manipulating around and what have you. But that's what we're looking for initially, is where we're buying something that's neat. We're buying a put option that's near the current price of the futures, and we're selling put options that are out of the money, and bringing, you know, the whole position brings in a credit. But not only that, it brings in a credit in a manner that we've sold things that are more expensive than the thing we're buying when we measure that with implied volatility. Was that too complicated?
No, that was great. No, really, it was great. I'm learning a lot. And so I have a few more questions. Mm-hmm. One is, at what point would you decide to do something more complicated, like a multi-option spread? Or, you know, I don't even know exactly how to say it. I've heard people talk about butterflies and all these other things. Like, I, once again, because I'm not an options trader, I'm curious as to why sometimes some traders will go to the extent of having all of these different options on, all these different legs of the options on. What would cause an options trader to want to do that?
Well, it's usually if you're into these four-legged positions, so like the one I just described, we're buying a put near where we are and selling, say, two puts at lower strikes, and then buying something way out of the money, a put way out of the money, just to hedge our risk. So butterflies, condors, you know, just regular credit spreads, all of those things, the option that you're buying that's most deeply out of the money is just there to limit your risk. And it also sets your margin requirements so that it doesn't vary on you in case the underlying moves against you for a while. Because if you don't do that and the S&P falls, then your broker is going to want more margin. Span margin will go up as the underlying goes down. And, you know, that can cause you other problems as well. So if you know what your what your requirement is, your capital requirement on the position is when you start out, and they know that it won't change, then you can make that decision on that position and still have money on some other position somewhere. And you won't have to be, you know, essentially robbing Peter to pay Paul for a margin requirement, some of their margin call, you know, later down the line. But typically, you know, those decisions to use the butterflies and all of that are ways to sell options and capture the premium of a decaying option and still limit your risk by having these out of the money options that are to protect your, you know, protect you in case something goes badly wrong. And, you know, that's the simple version of it. Whether you want to use exactly a butterfly or use what the position that we have, which some people call a Christmas tree or what have you, they're all variations of the same thing. We're trying to sell options, collect that decaying premium, you know, pocket the credits, and still have limited risk in case something goes badly wrong.
Simple question, I hope. Mm-hmm. If I'm looking at the market and I think that the market is going to go down, you know, dramatically from here, let's just say, I mean, 5-10% mm-hmm. over the next week to month.
Wow. What, okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, I mean, you know, I'm just trying to put a scenario in front of you to where, as a futures trader, sometimes I'll look at these scenarios, I'll see a high or a low made, and I'll go, you know what? I think this thing's going to really get whacked over the next week or two, you know? And it's very hard for me to stay with the futures, but I think with everything that's I'm looking at on my charts and just maybe just years of experience, and I'm thinking to myself, this is a time where I feel like I should just be short. What's mm-hmm. the best way for a trader to go about that position in options?
Well, if you, you know, have that strong of an opinion, I would say you just want to buy puts. Not spread them, not butterfly them, not do any of the other things, because you don't know how far it's going to go down. You know, in December there, the market went from basically 2,800 in December 2nd to excuse me, to 2,350 by December 24th. So, and the best way to play that is just you buy puts up near 2,800 and you ride them down. Now, you don't have to stay in that same put. As it makes money, let's say it now falls to 2,700, you could roll down, sell the one you owned that's now worth a lot of money, and buy an equal quantity of something that's at the money and keep doing that a few times. But if you have that strong of an opinion, I don't really think you should be spreading or anything else. You should just be buying the straight out put and, you know, managing the position as it works for you. I know a lot of people like to do spreads all the time, but frankly, you would never have whatever you sold against that put you bought there on December 2nd or what have you would have been a loser. So it just got in your way. So if you have that strong of an opinion, I think you should just go outright long and at the money option if it's bullish opinion, a call, and if it's bearish opinion, a put.
Okay, so I was going to ask you the opposite way. If I felt the market was going to rally, a big rally was potentially coming, so you would just buy the call. And going back to buying the put, what I was going to follow up with was to buy the option because the spike in volatility will increase the option's price. But why would you want to buy the call if you think the market's going to rally? Because I've done that in the past where like I've bought the call, and the market's gone up like 10, 15 bucks the next day. And I'm looking at my call and it's barely moved. I'm going, okay, what am I missing here? You know, I don't understand right. why that happens.
Yeah. So there's two things there. This is now we're getting more into what makes an option price. One thing is the delta. In other words, that measures how much the option is going to move when the underlying moves. So an at the money option, let's just roughly say has a delta of 0.5. So the next day, if the futures go up 10 points, your option should go up 5. But there's also a volatility component, which is what you're talking about. So if volatility decreases while you own that call, that's going to hurt you. So you kind of feel like a salmon swimming upstream. Is that, yeah. So that's a feeling you had.
Exactly. That's exactly how I felt.
Right. So the way to counter that is to buy an option with more delta and less volatility exposure, which would be a more in the money option. So let's say, and when you're buying a put, and you know you're buying at the money put, and it goes down, everything's working for you. Not only is the market going down, but volatility is going up. The call has the opposite problem. So you buy a call that's more in the money, or in this case, I might say you could spread, because the only time that what I'll call it a pull spread actually makes sense theoretically is when the options are very expensive. So let's say, you know, you turned bullish last December 26th, the day after Christmas, which was the perfect time to turn bullish, but VIX was way high. So you might have bought a call and you found yourself having that problem, although that problem really is only going to last for a couple of days. If the market keeps going up, you have much more delta working for you and much less volatility exposure working against you as the option goes in the money, so as the market goes up. But if if you wanted to hedge it, you know, in the very beginning, you could have maybe bought an at the money option. At that time, the futures were down around 23.50, and then say sold something, a call, maybe way out of the money against it, maybe like 24.50 or something like that. Although the market moved so fast, then I think it went up 100 points in like 8 days. So, you know, even that call would have the one you sold would not have been helping. But you can look at these things and see how much your exposure is in terms of volatility decreasing and in terms of the stock going up. And the way to counter that is just to buy more deeply in the money option to start with a call. So maybe at 23.50, instead of buying a 23.50 call, you buy a 23.30 call. I understand it's going to cost you a little more, but right away that thing's going to have a delta of like maybe 70 or 75. So the first day the market goes up 10 points, you're going to make 7 or 7.5 points on the call. And yeah, maybe the volatility component is going to cost you, you know, 1 or 2 points, but you're still going to end up with a pretty good profit.
Understood. Thank you so much for explaining that to me. Great insight today, but we're not done yet. I have my rapid fire questions next if you're ready for those.
Okay, sure.
All right, everybody. Our rapid fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Access the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. And now you can trade cryptocurrency, spot, and derivative markets side by side. For more information, please visit TradingTechnologies.com. Larry, first question for you. What trader has influenced your life the most and why?
So as I explained, a lot of my stuff was self-taught, but I would have to give credit to my first serious stockbroker, Ron Dilks, because he's the one that got me into technical analysis. And the two of us learned a lot about it together just from, you know, going over charts, trading and what have you. Also back at that time, which is in the early 1970s, Stan Weinstein wrote a tremendous newsletter, and so did James Dines. James Dines is still writing newsletters, but I learned a lot from both of those guys. Weinstein more from, how to apply technical analysis, and Dines more on the, I would say, the psychological side.
What was one of the hardest things for you to overcome in trading?
I think that is the psychology of trading. I mean, it's just the number one thing is for me to stop second guessing myself if a trade loses. You know, if you had the right setup, everything looked good, you put it on and it didn't work out, it just doesn't work out. Just go on to the next trade. Stop worrying about that last one. And if you violated your criteria and jumped into something you shouldn't have been, then maybe you should be second guessing yourself. But most of the time, if you're sticking to your principles, trade didn't work out, don't worry about it.
How has your trading process evolved over the years?
For me personally, I think it's gotten simpler. I've made a lot of money personally selling naked options. But in recent years, I've gotten away from the fancier spreads more or less and gone more towards directional trading in my own account, just because it simplifies things and I can concentrate on that quickly and I know exactly what I need to do. So I guess I've just gotten simpler.
What is one attribute that you believe every trader should have?
I'm going to go back to what I said before. You should have the ability to forget your losses and move on to the next trade. For me, one of the great ways to do that is just take the darn thing off your screen. If you got out for a loss, just take it off. You know, it's easier to do with a stock than a future because you might want to know where that future is trading. But if it was some stock that you were trading that was sort of an outlying thing and you probably wouldn't normally be in it except for that one trade, I'd take it off my screen. I'll just get it out of my mind. Forget about it.
Favorite book about trading?
I would have to go back to Dine's book that he wrote. I believe it's out of print now. It's called How the Average Investor Can Use Tactical Analysis. But it's a lot about psychology. You can find it on eBay and things. And then, of course, Edwards and McGee's book, Technical Analysis of Stock Trends. Those are the two that, you know, I thought were great.
Favorite movie about trading?
Trading Places.
What's the best piece of advice that you've received about trading?
I'd say using trailing stops and not targets. I mean, targets are something for a fundamental analyst to fool around with, but us regular people that are in there really in the trenches, I mean, you don't know how far a thing's going to move. So if you use a trailing stop, you'll never catch the exact top, but you'll catch a whole big portion of a large move. And if you use targets, you'll never catch a large move.
If you could go back in time and give the younger you a piece of advice, what would it be?
Again, as I said, I would tell myself to keep things simpler. You know, don't get so complicated.
If you had an elevator pitch me your edge in trading, what would you say?
My knowledge of option markets and especially volatility derivatives gives me an edge over pretty much everybody else in that space, I think.
Last question for today, Larry. What's your favorite thing to do when you're not trading?
I play the piano. Last week, I actually was at the MIM Museum in Arizona. I played the Steinway in the lobby there.
Wow.
And I also shoot pool.
That's very cool. Do you find that playing the piano is almost like a meditation for you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I definitely like to do it whenever I can.
Very cool. Larry, where can people find you on social media, preferably Twitter, and give us a website to check out?
So the website is www.optionstrategist.com. There's just one S in the middle there. And I think our Twitter handle is up there, but it's opstrategist, OPT strategist.
Larry, what can I say? Thank you so much for coming on Futures Radio Show today.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.